everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad I gave Chris the privilege of driving me down here. It's about time he did something in AA besides talk. You never want to get smart with somebody, particularly the guy who has a microphone after you. I'm glad. I want to thank whoever invited us down here. It's always a joy and a privilege to be allowed to come and participate in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm one of them strange people who believe it's a privilege just to come in here and sit without doing anything. And I hope I never get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble in here and get sober and stay that way. And the reason I tell you that is because everything that's good and decent in my life is a byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to the new people. I'm glad you're here. My very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was very nearly my last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I wandered in and sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a while ago, and people got up at podiums very much like this and started talking about being sober. And my reaction to that was that Alcoholics Anonymous had nothing to offer me. And the reason I thought that is because I was as physically sober that day as I am right now, and have been from that day to this. Now, I don't know why I'm alcoholic. I think it has something to do with the whiskey I drank. The longer I stay sober, the smarter I get about that. I don't know. It seems like to me, and I don't really know if it's true or not, but it seems like to me that I was born needing some type of an answer. The problem with that is I don't know what's wrong with me. It's kind of hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm a little restless, irritable, and discontented, but I don't understand then as I've come to understand now. Those are the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to mankind. I didn't know that. Because I looked around, I saw a lot of people drinking. Everybody in my family drank. They were bootleggers, whores, convicts. They were just a real functional kind of family. Mom drank, beat up dad. Dad drunk, beat up mom. They both got drunk, beat me up. I just had a real wild weekend going around there. They were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. And I'd born into a sea of nonsense and craziness, and I don't understand what's going on, but I'm looking for a way out of this dilemma. I don't have nothing to do with these people. I want to feel better. I just don't want to be the way I am. I'm not looking for this outlet of things. I don't know what to do. I looked up, I saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived when she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober almost 53 and a half years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I used to tell her, you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she needed out of this church she went to. I didn't know she was going to church. I used to watch her. I had spent a lot of time with my grandmother. Everybody else was busy. And so I see Grandma get up on Sunday morning and step over the bodies where they tore her house up the night before, these crazy people. And she'd put on the best thing she had. She'd leave. She'd be gone for a couple hours. When she came back, something had happened to her. I could see that. She's a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. And she kind of danced around these people and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that. And not knowing any better, I had this idea that all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. The problem with that is my grandmother's not alcoholic. And as a little child, I went over and sat in my grandmother's church with my grandmother and waited for it to happen to me. Like a lot of people who come to AA. They come here and sit and wait for something to happen to them. And they wonder why they're restless, irritable, and discontented. So I waited. Nothing happened that I know of, can remember. So I said to my grandmother one time, "Granny, when's it going to happen to me?" Now, Grandma don't even have the slightest idea what I'm talking about. She said, "When you walk down front." And so I went down front, and I remember nothing happening down there either. It took me a long time sober to understand something very simple. There was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. See, what I don't know this, and I didn't know this the day I wandered into Alcoholics Anonymous. What I'm doing in that church is what I've done all my life. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here. That only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. The book describes it as an illness of a spiritual nature, a malady. And my answer came in a very peculiar way. Sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day with my grandfather, watching him drink whiskey out of a fruit jar, whiskey that he made. He laughed, I picked it up and took a drink of it. And I guess according to the only authority in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our book, the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, it's really not a bad reaction, if you want to know the truth. I mean, if it'd been a bad reaction, well, you'd have another speaker here tonight. Don't you kind of get tired of people bad-mouthing whiskey? I do. I want to go up and slap them sometime. Alcohol is the best friend I ever had. I'll tell you what alcohol did for me. I don't know what it did for you. Alcohol kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't taken that drink on my grandfather's porch that day, I'd have probably blown my brains out a little while after that. That's how restless and irritable and discontented I was. But see, I wasn't ready what happened to me next. I wasn't quite aware of it. And for the next 20 years, I was not aware of what was happening to me once I put alcohol into my system, because it doesn't happen to everybody that puts it into their system. See, what happens to me when I put alcohol into my system, what develops in me is some type of an allergy that makes me trigger some type of a phenomenon of craving, that once I take a drink, I'm powerless not to take the next drink, and then the next drink. And the Chinese have a great philosophy about it. They say, the man takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. And that's the way it was with me. The drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. And so what happened to me is a pattern that I followed for the next 20 years of my life, because 3 days later, I was pulled out of underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol in Compton. They pulled me out of a car and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. Just travel around out there. I went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, if you want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. If you're going to be bad, be bad. I mean, don't go drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. When you quit getting your court card signed, AA will still work, you know. I don't understand that. I threw everything I did. I threw it all into the battle. Everything. I threw it all into the battle. I threw my health, my sanity, any type of talent that God may have given me, any type of opportunities that came my way because of the talent God had given me. Everything. My family, my sanity, everything into this thing. And every time I turned around, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And at the ripe old age of 24, 25 years old, somewhere around there, I ended up in cell and solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. And what I've come to understand, what I was doing crawling around on that cell that day, is the same thing I did at my grandmother's knee in the church. I'm looking for an answer to this dilemma that had me. The same answer held true there that held true the day I sat at my grandmother's knee. I did not know what was wrong with me, and so I did not know what to do about it. I didn't have the slightest idea. I didn't know that. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And that's what came crawling into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in November of 1959. I come to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here to get sober. I was sober. I was physically sober that day I got here as I am right now. You see, being sober was my problem because I didn't want to be sober. Sober, all hell broke loose in my life because the situations in the life that I led prior to that situation from juvenile hall to that cell in solitary confinement, the situations and the thing that I did created nightmares that were beyond description with me. When I'm sober, you see, I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with nightmares, cold sweats running down my back. I'm standing handcuffed between two detectives out underneath a tree while they bury my 17-year-old brother. And my mother's voice is ringing in my ears, "Look what you've done now, scum, you've killed our baby." Those things are terrifying to a guy. And I knew about all this kind of stuff. And thousands of faces of people I'd harmed in my selfish, self-centered walk through life were haunting me the day I wandered into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I moved in and sit down in the back row where people like me sit. I'm not going to move up front. Somebody might think I'm a member or something, for Christ's sake. So I sit back there. That way I can judge everything. So I don't know what's going on here. C2 brigade, I think, is some type of an anti-aircraft brigade. I don't know what AA is. I said, "What is this?" He says, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." I sunk down in my seat. Anybody see the big gangster hanging out with them winos? I got something to live by. I'm telling you, I got a macho. If I'd have had earrings or a hat, I'd probably had it on backwards or something. A lot of people seem to forget you can drink like a gentleman or hats are off to you. See, this hat's not off to some of you. But I don't judge. I'm just reporting. I don't know what AA is. Nobody had ever said to me, "Go to AA. Go to AA, DNA." They didn't say that to me. He said, "If you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." And I'm hearing that from people who had them things all over the wall that said they know something. But what they never took into consideration every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am at this moment. So I knew they didn't know what they were talking about either. Because I wanted to turn the clock back to 1950 when I didn't become responsible for the death of my 17-year-old brother. But he couldn't do that, you see. I told him if he could do it, if you turn it back to 1950, it'd be okay. I wouldn't do these things. But you don't understand, I'm saddled with this guilt I can't live with, and I don't know what to do with it, so I have to do what I do. But I don't know that sitting in that meeting. I do it like some brain surgeon waiting for an emergency operation. The ambulance will be here shortly. Where was I? My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. But I didn't know what's going on. I sit in the back row of the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous back there in the inventory point. I made fun of the people. It was sickening. People came 100 miles up those old back roads every Sunday. There was no money in the treatment of alcoholism. They came there because they were trying to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffered, I guess. And I didn't know what was going on, but I sat in the back row and made fun of them. because I don't, you know, I'm one of these type of guys that if I do not understand it and you're getting too close to me, I'm going to make fun of you. I'm either going to mimic you, make fun of you, or hate you. I don't have any in-between things there. I'll tell you how very sick that is. It took me a long time to figure this out because I'm such a quick study. Here I am, sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. And I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. There's something wrong with that. But I'm hip. So hip, almost hippity, hopping right out the door here. But I kept coming back to your meetings because I didn't understand what you were doing. So it's kind of hard for me to understand what's going on today because I'm a taker, you see. And taker's a loser. I don't understand anybody that's given a little just for the hell of giving. I don't understand that. Takers like me, when I come, I don't understand why anybody would get in their car, drive 100 miles at their own gasoline, their own expense, and spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people that didn't want to listen to them. I didn't understand that. Takers don't understand it. And I'm a taker. That's why I'm a loser. I don't understand that. I said to one of these guys one day, hey, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You like to look at the animals in the cages? Ha! He gave me one of them deep AA answers. Well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. And he turned and walked away. See, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it either. See, there's a... My sponsor, Norm Alpe, when he was alive, used to have a great thing about talking about some invisible line here. There's an invisible line where you cross over from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I don't know. I think I was born on the other side of that line, but it doesn't make much difference. But I'm here to tell you there's an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't pass over that line, you're either going to die, go nuts, or go to jail. There's no options for that. There's no way out of it. There's no easy way to do it. It was read here tonight. Many of us have tried all kinds of different delusions to prove we were different, that our case was different, we could drink like normal people. And that's the line where you got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And you got to do it just for the hell of doing it, expecting nothing in return for it. Now, I don't know that. I don't understand any of this stuff, why these people are doing this. But I was lucky enough to be in a place where I couldn't get out of. And so I went to a meeting one day, and a little guy that I knew did 23 flat years walked into this penitentiary on a panel and stood at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something that all the great learned people in my life who had been giving me shock treatment, and high-pressure water hose treatment, kept me in straitjackets and analyzed me and wildomized me and blah, 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 blah me. He knew something these people didn't know. And it was just so simple that you almost miss it here. He looked down where I was sitting and he said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever said that to me. They said to me, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. But nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. You see, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. It's teaching you how to live without these things in your system. Now, I don't know that. I went up to him after the meeting and I said to him, Lester, how do you learn how to live? See, I knew him. He was my baseball coach when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for a couple of years. I put that on a resume one time. You ought to have saw that guy. He said to me, San Quentin, where's that? I said, it's up near Stanford. He said, it must have been a great school. I said, I learned a lot of things. I didn't get the job. So. So I went up to him after him. I said, how do you learn how to live? See, I want to know how I can lay down one night in my life. I'd be ready to die after that. If I could lay down one night and sleep all the way night through without any type of chemicals in my system where I didn't have a nightmare. When I didn't have that reoccurring nightmare. That reoccurring nightmare of my mother's dead eyes staring at me with hate. That's what I woke up with. That's what I wanted. I didn't know that. But that's what I wanted. And he's a very wise man. Because he knew me, he told me there was a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If I'd go get that book, he'd go home and pray that I'd find some part of me in it. So I went to the prison library the next day and stole the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I got a big-time gangster image. Nobody see me signed up to anything as lame as Alcoholics Anonymous. I opened the book Alcoholics Anonymous to read, probably with the Losers theme song in my head. I'm going to read your book, and I'm going to prove to you my case is different, and it won't work for me. It's a Loser's theme song in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't understand. My case is different. I'm an alcoholic and... Yeah, you're an alcoholic and an idiot. You can't stay sober here and be different. That much I do know. That's my experience of sitting in 4 or 5 meetings a week for almost 54 years. So I watched this situation handled. I read in a doctor's opinion that book about this thing called The Phenomenon of Craving, and somehow or other it got my attention. And I started to reflect on my life, wonder why none of this happened to me, why in reform schools I was offered scholarships to play baseball at major universities. 1951, San Quentin State Penitentiary, I was given a contract to play baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals. I didn't understand why none of that happened because I never got to play ball for UCLA or I never got to play ball at the Cardinals. And the reason I thought, basically, was because of where I came from. Obvious. I mean, you know, the family I came from, the gang I joined 11 years old in juvenile hall, and the things that we did to prove our macho for the next 20 years of our lives and everything we had to do just to maintain a certain status quo in these kind of situations. The nightmares it created was all right, and the madness that had to happen time and time and time again just to validate yourself. And I thought it all came out. I was a victim before it was popular. That day, I did something that I did this morning, and I've done every day of my life for almost a little over 53 years now. I assume the responsibility for my own actions. It's nobody's fault. It's not alcohol's fault. It's not drugs' fault. It's not my gang's fault. It's not the state of California's fault. It's not my mother's fault or my father's fault. It's not any of that. I'm the guy. I'm the guy that did it. I assume full responsibility for that. Although I can do it like a lot of people, to blame it on my disease. If I had a disease, I could do that. But I don't. Book says I don't have a disease. Book says I have an illness of a spiritual nature. A malady, it's described in our book. Requires a spiritual awakening to overcome what's wrong with me, not just putting the plug in the jug and butting a seat somewhere. You hear that, you know. From time to time, from people. Don't drink, no matter what. Let me inform you of something. Alcoholics drink no matter what. Drinkers don't drink no matter what. Alcoholics do. We drink before our butts get tired, too, I'll tell you that. I don't. I spent 3.5 hours shortly thereafter with a man telling me about every rotten, filthy, corruptible thing I'd ever done in my life. I told that man things in that room that day that would have kept me in the penitentiary for the rest of my natural life. And the reason I did that is because my book, Alcoholics Anonymous, says that I got to be fearless and thorough because I'm trying to build an ark to walk a free man. I can't be free hiding my secrets or living in my secrets or living in my past. I got to be able to move forward. That's what my book said. I walked out of that man's office that day and sat down in the grass, and I guess for the first time in my life I saw a flower or a tree or a bird, something. I don't know what it was. I just saw things differently. I spent the next year and a half of my life in that penitentiary trying to clean up the wreckage of my past. Didn't have to have a sponsor to do it. The book has instructions on how to do that. So I wrote letters to judges to see if there were any secret indictments hanging around out there, whatever it may be, because I wanted to clear it up because I thought maybe I had a shot to live in some type of coexistence with whatever it was I found here. That's what I shot. So I was going to hang on to it like a drowning man hangs on to a life preserver in the water. 50-some years later, I still hang on to that same life preserver. Because 50-some years later, I'm still doing the same thing I did 53 years ago. I'm still going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still trying to incorporate these steps into my life. I'm still trying to carry my message to the alcoholic who still suffers in any capacity that I'm asked to carry it. I don't have specialized things to do. I do whatever it is I'm asked to do by letting Chris drive me. But we had a good time. We talked. One alcoholic talking to another, which is really what it's all about. He shares with me, I share with him. What an amazing thing. I walked out of that penitentiary on June the 4th, 1961. I didn't know anything about this world out here. So I came from the ghettos. I run the streets. I went to jail. I never had a job. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't have nothing. I was armed with something that I'd never been armed with. It's called the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. Working in my life. And this little phrase that followed me was this, that someday maybe you'd let me come and sit with you, that you would give me the privilege of coming and sitting in your meeting. And I said to myself, if you do that, if you give me that privilege, I'll do anything you ask me to do. For over 52 years now, since I walked out of that penitentiary, I have done just about everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Oh, not always willingly. Well, you got to watch these people who can't wait to get to their next meeting. Tell them you ought to get a life, for Christ's sake. I don't want to come. I didn't want to come tonight. Chris made me come. Chris needed me. He needed to be of service. And John had to get here so he could tell me he was going to save my seat. This is a wonderful life I got. I can't tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet. That day I came out of the penitentiary, my mother fell off the steps blind drunk. Told her, I'm going to an AA meeting, Mom. She said, I'm fine, I think you should. My mother drank herself to death here. I had a ringside seat watching it. You want to see something? You want to feel some guilt? Watch somebody drink themselves to death whose soul you have destroyed with your actions. Somebody whose life that you have destroyed practically by your actions. I watched my mother do that, powerless to do anything about her drinking. Every once in a while, my mother would come to Alcoholics Anonymous. She never stayed. She never stayed because she was never able to buy the package here. The whole package is not just coming to meeting, not just being of service. It's the steps. It's the tradition. It's sponsorship. It's helping others. Being doing things. Doing anything that you think that you can or you're asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're willing to do it or not, just do it, for Christ's sake. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. My mother never forgave me for the death of my baby brother. And when I went to her and asked her for her forgiveness, I asked my sponsor before I went to do anything about it. I said, Norm, I got my mother's the only name on this list I still got left. I got to go talk to my mother about this. He said, what do you want from your mother, Johnny? I said, I need my mother to forgive me. He said, then you might as well forget it, because she ain't never going to forgive you. I said, for God's sakes, what am I going to do, Norm? He said, why don't you just go try to be your mother's son for a change? Why don't you act like a son and treat her like a son under all conditions and all circumstances, whether she likes it or whether she rejects it or not, you be her son. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw when she left. I was holding her hand in the hospital. The hate in her eye was still there when she looked at me, but there was no hate in my eye. There was no guilt or remorse in mine because I had done for 30 years with my sponsor. I became my mother's son. I took care of her in the good and the bad. I took care of her when she was drunk with her abuse. I took together when she was sober, when she wanted to see her grandchildren. I took them to see her. I did everything that a loving son could do that you taught me a loving son's supposed to do. So when my mother passed and went to wherever my mother went, I was all right with it because my sponsor told me a very simple little thing that I try to pass on to the people that I sponsor. The forgiveness in Alcoholics Anonymous does not come from the people you're trying to get forgiveness from. The forgiveness has to come from God. My only job here is to try to clean up the wreckage of my past. And the way I look at it, my God seemingly has forgiven me for a great deal of things that I did because I have a fantastic life. I have been all over the world since I've been sober. All over the world. And it's because my sponsor made me go get a full and unconditional pardon. I followed my sponsor's instructions to the letter, even though I was threatened to be put in jail. That's something, be 12 or 14 years sober and go try to make amends to the Long Beach Police Department. They wanted to put you in jail, and you hadn't done anything. You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to a thief when they get accused of something they haven't done, for God's sake. Yeah, I've had business failures. I've been married and divorced. My youngest daughter got running the streets after senior in high school, and I had to put her in the streets and tell her you can't live here under those conditions. And I wasn't even in Al-Anon, so I knew how to release with love. I didn't overlook to make allowances. I knew where she was going, what she was doing. But by the same token, I was standing there the night that she showed up in the rain and asked me if she could come in. But she'd been put aside from the job that she's had since she got out of high school, and her little boy had been taken away from her. She had no money, and she said, come here. And I said, here's the condition, Jackie. If you want to live in this house, then you're going to have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you're going to have to get a sponsor, and you're going to have to do everything that sponsor says, and I'm not going to be it. Or you can turn and walk right back out in that rain. That's your choice. I'm here to tell you that my daughter, my baby daughter, had been sober for over 19 years from that day to this day. She went and got a sponsor. And it wasn't me. But I heard what my daughter said, so I learned more about this illness that we have for my child. She says, you know, Daddy, when I'm out there running the street, she says, I always knew I could come home, but I knew I had to follow the rules and I wasn't ready. I don't know how many young people are sitting in this room are feeling that way, but that's the way it is. I hope you have somebody in your life that loves you enough to lay down the law, to make you do something that'll save your life. The sad part about Alcoholics Anonymous is that we create an atmosphere that saves lives. But yet a lot of people reject that because they think it's something else that it isn't. every day of my life that I get up today, I bet my life that my sponsor's right. I bet that whatever I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous pleases my God I've discovered sitting in your meetings. I pray, God, that my actions in Alcoholics Anonymous would make me a better father, a better grandfather, and a better great-grandfather. I pray, God, every single day that all the people that I know in this world will never have to die from alcoholism, that they can live some happy, joyous life, and the people that God has placed in my care to incorporate in this program of recovery. I pray, God, for each and every one of them every day, that they have some type of peaceful coexistence in this world because of this God. And everybody who was near and dear to me in my life have all left. They've all gone. They've all passed on to something else. And I miss them all a great deal, to tell you the truth. I miss my sponsor, Norm, practically every day of my life. He's been dead since 1983. I miss my Papa Chuck since 1984 when he died. I miss him every day. But what I've learned is that as long as I'm alive and well, so are they. Because I carry them with me wherever I go. I carry them with me tonight when I'm sitting there listening to Chris talking. He's coming down here when we stop for coffee. And I listen to the words that Chris had to say. And I listen to the words of the third chapter. And I listen to the 12 traditions. And everything that echoes about these great people in this in my life happens to me when I'm sitting in a meeting of alcoholics. And what I come to Alcoholics Anonymous for has already happened to me sitting there before I was interrupted by the chanting. I guess that's all some people ever learn, principle before personality. I guess that's the way you participate. A lot of things bother me in AA. We don't end a prayer right. We're supposed to end a prayer by saying, Amen. Not most people. Keep coming back. Don't read the book. Talk to your sponsor. Read the step. Some people go on for 4 or 5 minutes. You hear things, some means like, who hangs the stars and keeps us out of bars? Our Father. I heard one in Canada not very long ago I thought was the end of all insults. Who sleeps with mother? Our Father. It is kind of hilarious. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't like this meeting, go to another one. Go somewhere else. Find it. Just keep going to meetings. And I guarantee you, if you go to meetings and you're new, keep going to meetings. Don't take nothing between meetings. You know, you go to meetings, sooner or later, you will come to a little area of your life. Maybe it's the area of eternity that you have lived for. And that moment will happen to you. My prayer for you tonight is this, that you adhere to that little magic entrance in eternity and come and join us. Join this happy road of destiny. And maybe someday you'll be able to say that I'm very happy to be here, and I hope none of us ever have to drink. Thank you very much.